Hello, and welcome to Parking Thought. I'm Jacob, and I'm glad you're here today. Once again, I'm hanging out on the couch with the iPad, and it's become part of my morning routine. I rather like it. The house is quiet. House is not quiet later on in the day. Oh my goodness. I got two boys who love to play some first-person shooter computer game, and so even though they sit exactly right next to each other, they get emotionally attached to whatever status they're at in the game, and they need to announce it at a loud volume. And then every once in a while, just because people are people, you know, you'll have one of the four children will go through a making random noise phase, and it kind of goes in sequence, right? One person will do it, and they'll hum something or sing something. It's just weird. And then the next person will do it, and then the next person, and then the next person, right? And so it just gets loud down here. At least it feels loud. So I'm a little sensitive to loud noise, but not in the way you might think. It's not being sensitive to, oh, that's loud, and I want to avoid it. It's sensitive to loud noise in that when my ability to determine where things are coming from, you know, is sound in a room, right, is compromised or feels compromised. I don't feel comfortable, and I get really anxious, and I try to avoid those situations. I already have enough trouble figuring out, you know, if somebody talks, which direction they're coming from. I've never been really good at that. And so it's not really my ears that are the issue. My ears are actually quite fine for being in the military for 20 years and being around all the artillery stuff. I wore my hearing protection, and when I was leaving the service, my ears were in pretty dang good shape. But it's how my brain processes, you know, what I hear. That's a little interesting. Now, I teased back some time ago that I would talk about a rocket attack that happened in Iraq and share the story of what that was like. And there's a lesson in there that we can apply now. And that's kind of how this podcast works, right? Find something in your life, find a lesson, bring it back to where we're at now. And I may do fewer episodes like this, and I may just talk in the future. But for right now, let's do this one. So the year was 2006. It was springtime, and late spring in Iraq. I was in Iraq at the time, yep. And so it was late spring in Iraq. So we're about the month of May. And what happens in late spring is it just gets extraordinarily hot, right? You start having, you know, 100-degree days is your norm, and that's kind of the way life goes. You don't see clouds anymore. All of the rain that you get in the early months of spring, right, their wet season that happens, February, March timeframe, all of that is effectively gone. The ground is completely dried up, and it starts getting to be a bit grouchy. Now, what's interesting is, I need to finish telling you guys where I was. So I was at I think it was called Fob Echo, and it was in Diwania, Iraq. And you can look that up. It's Diwania. I don't know how to spell it, but I find it. And every once in a while, I go on and I look, and I can see the Google satellite images of where this place was at. Diwania was in south central Iraq. The base location itself at one point had been established or maintained by a Spanish unit, right? So we were an international coalition when we were in Iraq the first time. We did have a lot of international, presence across the spectrum. So this base had been established and groomed by a Spanish unit, and the Spanish unit left. And there was another international unit that was there. Some of them were Polish. I remember that. We had some of them that were Polish. We had others that were, if memory serves me right, from Mongolia. We had like probably the only Mongolian unit, you know, was also there. And the Mongolian unit would provide the base security around, the guard duty and that sort of stuff. And the Polish unit was there and operating in the area. And the Polish unit was pretty cool because Poland was, you know, part of the USSR, you know, back in the day. And so their military was equipped with Soviet equipment. And so the Hind helicopter, we actually had two Hind helicopters on that base. And that thing is a phenomenal fantastic piece of engineering and work. The Hind helicopter, if you've never looked it up, and our government is not known for making good choices, so when they wanted helicopters, they contracted, you know, attack helicopters and troop transport helicopters, right? So we have the UH-60 as our utility helicopter. It's our smaller scale utility and troop transport helicopter, right? And it only holds, I think, 8 or 10 people. And then, you know, if you wanted to actually have a helicopter that had the potential to attack, you had the Apache and the Kiowa and that sort of thing. Or Kiowa is more of a scout. But it does have some attack capabilities. So you come back to the USSR and they say, well, let's just put it all in one. And so the Hind helicopter has the ability to be highly maneuverable, troop transport, and be able to to attack. And it's way cool. It's a piece of engineering. I've always wanted to ride in one. I didn't get a chance to while we were down there. But man, it's just a really neat beast. So we're down at this FOB. At this point, my role is communications. And I didn't have to do any communications work at that location. So we had been at a couple of previous locations my team had, and providing services and network. You know, we did some network work and network management in other locations. But while we were there, I think we were there for a month or 5 weeks. And we were there kind of in the interim. They were transitioning equipment across the across our footprint in Iraq. And we were going to be responsible for moving to someplace else to help maintain the network there. So we're basically on this FOB. FOB is forward operation base. So we're basically on this FOB with almost nothing to do. Our daily routine is, you know, it wasn't like eat and sleep the whole time, but it wasn't exactly terribly productive either. And so, you know, we volunteered for different responsibilities to kind of keep the team busy and keep us active a bit. And so I remember I had a sergeant underneath me. I had a sergeant I worked for, and then we had two or three soldiers on our team at this point in time. And we had this assignment where if the base were to get attacked, our job was to, and there's different versions of attacked, right? There's oh, somebody tried to come in the front gate, and then there's, oh, somebody, you know, lobbed a grenade over the wall, you know, those sorts of things. Different versions of attack, regardless of what the type of attack was, because sometimes they could be coordinated. You could have dudes lobbing grenades over the wall, and then somebody trying to get in the front gate, or somebody else trying to breach the walls that were put up around the side. So you're not sure when one type of attack happens, if that's all there is, or if it's going to be more. And so one way to describe how you prepare for your defense is the zombie apocalypse, right? What happens if there's a swarm of people that, you know, mass on a particular area, how would we respond? And so part of that response was for my team to go to the other part of the base where we were at, from where we slept, right? We would have to go to where our communications headquarters was on that location and be able to provide a guard duty type of service, right? You know, to defend the entry points of that location. We get a rocket attack one night. It was not the first time it had happened. It was the third night in a row or something like that we dealt with a rocket attack. And what had happened previously is you ended up with, you know, one or two rockets fired and the attack was basically over and Bob's your uncle and you're done, right? That was basically it. And then we'd go over and we'd pull our guard duty for about an hour and a half, and we were finished. Now, if you guys remember the interview that I did with Brent, where Brent and I were talking about how, you know, fire alarms, right, when you know it's an accident, right, and somebody pulls the alarm like they used to do in the barracks when I was in Georgia, right, somebody every Friday or Saturday night would pull the alarm at 2 a.m., and it would be a false alarm, but we had to all leave the building anyway. So after three nights of rocket attacks, right, where it was like one rocket or two and then you're done, you know, we're sitting in this bunker and, you know, there's a few rocket attacks, or a few rockets that land, you can hear the explosions. You're not sure if they landed on the FOB or not, because it's hard to tell when you're in a concrete bunker where the noise is coming from and what's happening. So this happens. And I figured, all right, we're done. Let's go and start pulling our guard duty. So I grab my guys. We tell our boss, hey, we're headed over there. And as we were walking over there, the rocket attack continues. And it was becoming more accurate. So the rockets were landing on the FOB. Now, what was really interesting to me is this is towards the end of my time in Iraq. I knew I'd gotten accepted in a program that would get me to college soon. And I don't know how I was in good graces with the Lord, but I felt calm. You know, I was literally walking upright while we had rockets, you know, impacting not too far away, right? And I felt perfectly calm. That wasn't the case with my soldiers. They did not feel calm. We got to where we were going. We, you know, hunkered down until the rocket attack was done. Then we pulled our guard duty. And I thought that was the end of it. And it wasn't. And it wasn't the end of it. You know, I spent a lot of time believing I didn't have PTSD because you couldn't see the signs of it. But for one of the soldiers I had underneath me, he started showing signs of it pretty soon. So we lived in these trailers, right? So it's kind of like a shipping container that we could fit a few bunk beds into, and metal walls, and you know, there'd be an air conditioner. They were really pretty nice compared to the tent living we did during our first deployment. So we're living in these containers, and you know, when you have your bunk beds in there, you always put them near the wall, right? There's something comfortable about that. Well, for one of my soldiers, what happened is, you know, when you toss at night, right, you can bump the wall. Well, when you bump the wall, it makes a sound that's almost the same as if there had been a rocket attack. And so, you know, he didn't sleep well after that and would toss and turn, and he would bump the wall, and then he'd wonder if we had a rocket attack, and then he'd, you know, be sleepy and start responding to that and then go out to the bunker and things. And he ended up developing hives as well. And, you know, this is back in the day when I was, you know, so uncaring and stubborn. You know, you just look at him like, hey man, you're broke. I don't know why, you know, like his body would break out in hives because of the stress that he was under because of this experience that I had helped to cause. Now, there's nothing, you can only criticize the decisions I made in hindsight, right? Because all of the time up to that point was pretty clear that what we were doing was correct, and it wasn't correct for that situation. And it caused this person a lot of mental health issues down the line. There were other things that contributed to that as well, but this was kind of that breaking point where things just didn't match up with what they needed to be. And so the lesson that I think we can apply now to COVID, right, is that people are going to respond to what we're all dealing with differently. We need to give them the space to do that. We need to give them the ability to recognize and go through that process of being broken for a while and then healing. And that soldier has gone through that since that time, right? He has gone through the time frame, and for some of us, it's years, where when you're dealing with things that people can't see, when you're dealing with how your brain is wired and wired differently, it can take years for it to go from you know, a point where you're really broken to getting better and better and better. And it doesn't happen overnight. Those rare cases where you hear, oh, it happened overnight and somebody had an epiphany and then boom, they're cured of some sort of mental struggle that they've been dealing with. Because let's call it that, right? Not all of us are going to get diagnosed with something that has a name. But that mental struggle that you're dealing with, that doesn't usually go away overnight. It goes away kind of like a sunrise. You know it's coming. You know it's there. And no matter how much you want it to happen sooner, it's going to happen at its own pace. And it's going to happen to where you don't notice the difference between, you know, 1 minute and the next, but you do notice the difference between, you know, 20 minutes or 30 minutes, right, in that process. And you won't notice it's happening 1 minute to the next in somebody else's life, but you will notice it's happening, you know, over the course of several years, right? And that people can get through what they've got but they may go through a phase where they're broken for a while. So that's the rocket attack story, and I'm glad you were able to listen to that today, and I'm glad I was able to share. So the way that I remember that story, because it happened in May, is that afterwards, when I wanted to tell my mom that I was under this rocket attack but felt totally calm because I really felt like, you know, God was protecting me, that was Mother's Day. And as much as I wanted to share that with my mother, I didn't, because she was already under a lot of stress from just having me over there, that knowing one of her sons was being attacked or wanted to be killed by somebody would not have sat well with her. And so I didn't have anyone I could tell, and ended up just owning in all of those feelings and emotions and what that was like for months and months and years. It took a long time to find people I could talk to and be able to have them understand what that was like. So let's wrap this episode up. As usual, if you like this episode, if you think it'll help out somebody else, then go ahead, share it with them. If you want to subscribe, you can search for us on your app on YouTube, or just head over to parkingthought.com for those subscribe links. Remember, in a world where you can choose to be anything, well, why not choose to be grateful?